Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Koslovich. Good morning, Chris Vandercook.
Good morning, Beth Ann. Kind of seems as if higher education is going back to becoming something that only the privileged have access to.
Well, we're going to start talking about that. And just throughout the morning, the theme for today just might be coming around again. So you stay with us and see if that's right. As you've just talked about, many high school graduates are now facing a summer that will lead them into the unknown, college. And they and many generations of graduates before them have gone off with the idea that going to university will increase their employability and their income. That belief that a college education is an equalizer is now getting some flack. New research says the universities themselves may be contributing to inequality, even for highly qualified students. Neil Milner is here to take the long view. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
This is, in some ways, as we've talked about, coming back to the money factor as opposed to the mind or the qualifications or the merit of a student, and that seems to be really troubling.
Well, it may be troubling, but it definitely is the case. We're talking about people here who get into college and are highly qualified. Let me just start with a couple of numbers that recently appeared in the New York Times Magazine study at the University of Texas. They found that family income of a student is so powerful determining whether a person graduates or not that it's more powerful than any other thing. For example, you just look at high SAT scores, that is really promising students with good skills. If 82% of high SAT, high income students graduate from college, only 44% of high SAT, low income students graduate from college. A low SAT student from a high income family is more likely to graduate than the highest SAT students from a low income family. So that's, and we'll come back to how that works later, but that's part of this process. There's something going on there.
Well, those are the kids that even get into college.
Yes.
What about those who are highly promising, might have really fabulous scores, but never even go because they don't think they can?
Well, that's where there is another stratification. First of all, there is a significant percentage of low-income students that have high ACT scores, which is like an SAT, who don't even apply to colleges. The elite colleges are still very, very heavily high income in terms of where their students come from. Students who do get into college and who are poor are much more likely to go to community colleges as opposed to other kind of four-year colleges. And that can be a problem because there seems to be evidence that if students are good students, but have some of these income issues, they do pretty well under certain conditions in the bigger colleges. There's all these kinds of little stratifications along the way, including the social life that exists in some of these colleges, where, in fact, the kind of social networking that takes place among people with family incomes and kind of solid family support doesn't work very well for students who are poor, and then they begin to be left out. So you see this increasing kind of stratification. But to me, the most interesting issue is getting back to this family income stuff, how somehow that affects the likelihood of even good students graduating.
Well, this seems to fly in the face of this idea that if you work hard, you've got the ability, that there will be somebody who will say, you have talent, I'm going to help you with the money part of it. And certainly looking at scholarships and how the universities and colleges themselves regard students who may be very able and really a very promising student for them, but the money isn't there. And if you have another student who has the same ability, or as you have suggested by some of this new research, even lesser ability, the choice is to take the kid with the money.
Well, that's right. That's one thing. There is a choice that schools have become more willing to take students who can pay the whole way. But I think that that's really less significant than this recent finding, which says even if students have money to go to college, you take a poor kid, gets a scholarship, and the University of Texas offers certain kind of scholarships. And this is a pretty good example. Texas is a is a good example of a public, high-quality university that has data on it. But even if you take that, even if money per se isn't the problem, it turns out what really seems to be the problem, and it took a long time to figure this out, is that poor kids, kids from lower-income families, even if they're smart, tend to have initial trouble. They feel left out. They feel panicky, as a lot of us, most of us probably did in college. But for a variety of reasons, they tend to see this as an obstacle they can't overcome. They tend to see their initial problems as a sign of innately limited intelligence. And what the studies have shown is if you work with these students, if you, in fact, you don't dumb down the courses, you don't give them remedial courses, because remedial courses are a ticket out of college. One of the clearest ways to see whether a person graduates or not is to see if they take remedial courses. If they do, they're less likely to graduate. But if you just redefine, help a student redefine what obstacles mean, that they're not necessarily a sign of limited innate intelligence, it's just an obstacle that they can overcome. And then you offer them ways of learning and leadership that doesn't identify them as remedial, it turns out that their success rates go way up. And that's, there are two important things about that. One is the kind of subtlety and the insidiousness of that kind of difference between poor kids and rich kids. This is not overt discrimination. And the other thing is how promising some of these and how straightforward some of these ways to change students' attitudes and to improve their success rate in graduating are.
So if those are fairly, as you say, simple and straightforward, why, when we say things like, well, college is the great equalizer, we want to encourage people to get into college, I mean, that's been part of our national ethos and thinking for such a long time, why is it that those simple, straightforward things haven't really been done to help kids overcome those expectations that they or limitations that they may be putting on themselves?
Well, there's a couple reasons. One is that some of this is fairly new research, not all that new. But the second thing is it's straightforward in terms of what seems to work, but it's not at all straightforward in regard to mobilizing an institution to have these kinds of things. What the University of Texas did was essentially to identify a problem. They had a faculty member who got very interested in this. He convinced others to become interested in it, to create a big database to try to figure out what was going on, to experiment with different ways of teaching. He became an administrator in charge of it. They hired experts to do this. They set up a huge research project to test it, and it worked. Now, I taught at the University of Hawaii for many years. They could not possibly do anything like this remotely as quickly as Texas did.
Why?
So why? Well, one is resources. Two is data. Three is the ability to commit to a project very quickly. University of Hawaii is undoubtedly not alone in this. This was a strong institutional commitment that was made in Texas. All of those kinds of things, I think, make it very difficult to make these kinds of changes. In a sense, you're starting to look at something that's a little different. First of all, you're not thinking about remedial courses as a solution. You're thinking about it as a problem. Secondly, you have to think about income as much as, if not more than, ethnicity and race. Colleges have been good in gathering data on ethnicity and race because, in effect, they have to. I mean, they also, there are good reasons to do it because of affirmative action. This requires something very, very different. And the amount of sophisticated work that went into this University of Texas one seems to be quite exceptional.
Well, it seems to go back to your point a little while ago that although the thinking about this may be reasonably straightforward, trying to mobilize the thinking into real action is where the breakdown is, apropos to your example of what is happening with UH and other schools like it.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about this again when you come back, as we will say goodbye to you for a little while. You'll be back with us on July 9th.
Yes.
Neil Milner is a political analyst and the contributing editor of our biweekly segment, The Long View. He'll be back in about a month to continue the conversation. You're listening to The Conversation on statewide member-supported HPR2. Coming up, films that really do put kids first. Now at 8:14, it's time for your quiz.
Who Umau, uka ho'olawe, o Hawaii.